Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, usairishradio.com. Worldwide, my guest is Neil O'Dowd, founder and publisher of Irish Voice Newspaper, Irish American Magazine, IrishCentral.com, and author of a slew of books, including two bestsellers, George Washington and the Irish, and Lincoln and the Irish. And let me welcome you, Neil O'Dowd. How are you?
Thank you very much, Adrian. Doing good. Congratulations on your new studio.
Yeah, you want to try to run it here. Yeah, that's all right. this is like going back to, you know, the stick drive car in Ireland, you know.
Anyway. I thought it was the one where you wind up this with the steering wheel. You know, you fix the crowbar.
You're talking about the starting handle. Oh, my God.
That's right.
Yeah, I suppose you're at the age you could remember stuff like that. Just want to... this is a big week, and nobody better than yourself to fill us in, you know, on the European Union announcement, the UK and the European Union announced that they had reached a new deal called the Windsor Framework to revise the controversial Northern Ireland Protocol, and which sets out some new rules. Before we get to that, Joe, Neil, you were extensively involved in the negotiation leading up to the Good Friday Agreement, which we will all be commemorating and celebrating in next month. Can you bring us back to that particular time? And, you know, with your own involvement, lead us into that very significant Good Friday Agreement?
Yeah, Adrian, I'd just like to first put this in terminology that people understand. Last week, a policeman and detective constable was shot 3 times in front of his son in Belfast, and we all got a reminder of what the old situation used to be like. And this poor man, who got 3 bullets for doing his job, almost died but was saved miraculously. But we got a notice right there that, hey, that we haven't gone away, you know, when it comes to violence on any side. And there's a hell of a lot of work still to achieve. But what has been achieved has been wonderful, and you go back 25 years, and now, of course, it all seems so natural and the way it happened and inevitable. But it wasn't like that at all. There were particular individuals who were just incredibly brave. Jerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, David Trimble, George Mitchell, people of that stature, Bertie Ahern, who at the time, Albert Reynolds, I should never forget. But at the time, when it looked most hopeless in the North forever getting a settlement, people suddenly started to believe that something dramatic could happen. And the role that I was involved in was working with Irish Americans who were working with Sinn Féin. And one of the things we were trying to do was trying to get Jerry Adams into the United States, just so that the politicians, the political wing within Sinn Féin and the IRA would have the victory like that. And then they could say, look, we're in the White House, we were with President Clinton. We believe this is the way forward. This is much better than just shooting at people. And there's a real future here. And I was very proud to be part of the group that put together the strategy to get that famous visa for Jerry Adams, which was a real breakthrough. And Jerry himself will tell you that it brought a ceasefire forward by about 12 months. So that's a lot of lives. So I played that role, and then obviously stood on the sideline marvelling at what George Mitchell did, which was just come from America with no background, no experience in the Irish issue. Spent 4 years, Edwin, locked up in a hotel room in Belfast, negotiating with everyone and anyone, showed the patience of Job, and eventually succeeded in pulling together the strands of what became known as the Good Friday Agreement. Right from the day that that was signed, there was opposition from people who were not at all enamoured of the fact that there might be peace in Ireland. There were dissidents within the IRA who brought down the Good Friday Agreement at one point and had to be rebuilt because the IRA ceasefire broke down. And on the other side, frankly, the unionists, with the exception of David Trimble, showed very little political courage, and just basically were, had to be dragged screaming to the table, as is happening now, and as has happened every year within the last 25 years. The unionists have always demanded that their voice, and their voice only, is the most important, and any of their concerns are paramount and more important than any other side. So you're at that stage again, and it's all mixed up with Brexit and Brussels and the British government and all that. But it comes down to the same question once again. Will the Democratic Unionist Party accept the overwhelming will of the people and agree to go back into government in Northern Ireland? And Adrian, as you and I sit here, I cannot guarantee you or say with certainty, despite all the hype that will come, despite the visit that will come from Bill Clinton and President Biden to Northern Ireland, I cannot say with my hand on my heart that the DUP will agree to go back into government. That's how bad it is.
Again, they have had numerous opportunities to save face. So what happens, Neil O'Dowd, if the DUP simply, doesn't go for it?
That's the million-dollar question, Adrian, and that's what all the pressure will be about in the next few weeks. The DUP really are faced with a terrible choice in terms of their own backbenchers and people who oppose Brexit and people who supported Brexit. They really have a situation where in previous times they had the British government on the hook, because the British government, like Theresa May's government, needed them to stay in power. This time there's no need for that, because Sunak, the new Prime Minister, has a huge majority. So he doesn't need the Democratic Unionist Party on this occasion. So they're left with this issue that they really have made no effort to solve. Do they believe in the Good Friday Agreement or do they not? Even though they never actually signed up to it, they took part in it. They went into government with Ian Paisley, and they walked out of it, as we know, when Geoffrey Donaldson and others decided they didn't want to stay in government. So their big issue right now is, what will they do? And my view is, what Geoffrey Donaldson is trying to do is to bring back the old unionist veto, to say that even though they no longer have a majority in the parliament, that we can still dominate and our wishes will always be listened to. And this is going to be a huge test of the new British Prime Minister, because if he gives in to them on this occasion and lets them stay out of government, it becomes impossible for him to ever bring them to the table. And you're quite likely looking at the collapse of the Anglo-Irish Agreement and the Good Friday Agreement.
Oh, boy.
Because you can't have a situation where one party has the ability to ruin everything for everyone else. It's not a democracy. What rightly would happen in a democracy is that the DUP would refuse to go into government, and then the Governor General or whoever is in charge in Northern Ireland would say, well, we'll go to the Alliance. They want to be in government, so let them be in government. That's called democracy. What the DUP are trying to do is undermine democracy by saying, you cannot have a government if we're not in it, and if we're not in it, then it won't work.
Neil, how much has the petrol been spilt on the fire as, for the first time, probably the first time ever, the unionists, the DUP, has suffered a huge defeat and is now forced to play second fiddle, considering that the Sinn Féin party is now the leading party by a mile, not even close.
Well, my heart goes out to them. After 100 years of power, when they never shared it with nationalists, they're now demanding they keep the power even though they don't have the vote. But I think what's most interesting about this, Adrian, is you are going to see in the next week or two, you're going to see Bill Clinton, you're going to see Tony Blair, you're going to see President Biden, you're going to see George Mitchell, you're going to see Bertie Ahern, you're going to see Hillary Clinton, you're going to see Prime Minister Sunak, all on top of the issue in Northern Ireland. All will be arriving there within a 5-day period of April 14th. And they are going to put enormous pressure, particularly if the President of the United States, as we are reporting today in IrishCentral.com,
yes,
will be going there to a state dinner at Hillsborough Castle, which will be chaired by none other than King Charles. So every bit of pressure that could possibly be mounted from the outside is being mounted. And if the DUP, in the face of all that, still refuses to go in, it just becomes impossible to ever see the situation working. And you're going to have, the British government is going to have to do something like force a new election and hopefully bring a different party to power in terms of the opposition to the DUP, the OUP or alliance.
Well, okay. If that were to, happen, then, you know, God knows they don't need to tick off, you know, King Charles now, because we haven't had that level of either interest or you know, potential interference before. So that may be the tipping point. So. They would
yeah,
be.
I think you're right. It is a tipping point. I mean, there'll be a state dinner in Hillsborough Castle, at which King Charles, Joe Biden, this is the plan right now. It may change, but I don't think it'll change dramatically. Bill Clinton, Joe Biden, President, the President himself, the King of England, who we all know as Prince Charles, used to be Prince Charles. The Prime Minister of England, Sunak, will be there. No doubt Tony Blair will be there. I mean, you're right. This is the pressure point of all pressure points. And if the DUP refuse to go back into government after this, their name will be, you know, written in bold letters as just people you can never deal with. And let's try somebody or something else.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll... you know, ponder on that, because definitely they'll have no place to go, and I don't know if they would like history to record that it was the DUP that destroyed, you know, the passage for peace in Northern Ireland. well, so we'll have to let that shake out. As you mentioned there, IrishCentral.com today carries a story about U.S. President Joe Biden heading for Ireland, and the first wink to be followed by the nod is that the Secret Service are already swarming Ireland from Belfast to Dublin, you know, a brief stop in Louth. There isn't much going on there. And then, and then, you know, my hometown of Ballina in Mayo, where he could be staying anywhere up to a week hanging out with his ancestors. Yeah.
Look, what we have in Loud, what you don't have, we have an indoor airport.
all right. Good. Yeah. We have Knock. Go away with that.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think that story is out of date. I think there was a story in the Irish paper today that he was going to visit for 6 days. Now, there's no way in hell, Adrian, as you well know, that an American president, maybe back in the days of JFK, but, you know, I would say if he's there for 1 day, that's probably as much as it'll be. I think he'll go to the event in Belfast. I think he'll go to the state dinner.
Yeah.
And I think he will live up to, in fairness to him, with his loud and male roots, he has always embraced him.
Yeah.
He's always said that he will do his very best, and this is his opportunity. The one thing I do know is that they are properly sensitive to the fact that President Clinton, who did all the heavy lifting back when, 25 years ago, is not obliterated by the presence of the president, that his role is not diminished in any way in terms of what he achieved back in 1998.
Yeah. No, you're right. Anyway, be that as it may, if this has been grossly exaggerated, of course we could always blame the Irish Mirror and
that's right.
And the Cork Examiner, and that's
the Western people.
Oh no, the Western people, they'll stick in. They're a bit like the DUP. They're not going to just wipe this off.
Just give up like that.
Western people might shame the president into it and say, "Hey, you said you were coming for 6 days. That's it." You know.
That's it. Yeah, you want to stay for 5 days in a bed and breakfast and be honest.
Yeah. What's wrong with that? He must for crying out loud. You know. Brian, you know, Neil Brian Donnelly's passing. A couple of days ago, was indeed a great loss, and he played such a significant role in making sure that the Irish did not fall by the wayside in terms of additional visas back in the day. Now, you were very involved then, and myself to a degree, in,
absolutely,
you know, shining a light on this guy who didn't need any of us. It wasn't at anybody's urging. And here he was. He was bucking, pretty strong leadership and Tip O'Neill and whatever. And,
yes.
And he, can you just maybe outline that for us? Who was Donnelly? Where did he come out of, you know?
Well, Adrian, you know, it's a time I remember with great happiness, and I remember so many great shows that you and I did together as we built the coalition, helped build the coalition that brought home the Donnelly visas. For your listeners who don't know what a Donnelly visa is, the chances are if you talk to any young Irishman over the age of 40, right now in America, he probably got his visa from Brian Donnelly or Bruce Morrison, who was the other one.
Mm-hmm.
It was simply a visa program put together for the Irish who have been excluded from America since the 1965 Immigration Act. The Irish in America were always looking for a champion, for a hero who would take the issue to the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate and get some relief for the Irish. And the man happened to be Brian Donnelly, and you're absolutely right. He was an Irishman from Dorchester who had the safest seat in the House of Representatives of anyone in the country. He didn't have to do anything, but he was very touched by the stories that he heard from people in Dorchester. And indeed, when we had him on the radio, I always remember the interviews we did with him where he was just knew everything about the Irish and Irish history and just was an all-around great guy. And by the way, a guy who could down a pint of Guinness in record time, as I tried to match him a few times. But he was just a hero for us. You know, every country needs somebody in America who represents their interests. And all those undocumented Irish, the kids who were living in fear every day of a knock on the door, who couldn't properly live up to their reputation and their history or their intelligence by going to college or whatever, who were living in the dark, really. And this man came along and without taking a lot of thanks for it, went ahead and took the issue and ran with it, convinced Tom Foley, convinced every major Republican, every major Democrat that this should be done. And we all remember even the fantastic times we had with the Donnelly Visa giveaway, when they were actually given out, how much work you did on it, how much work a lot of people did on it. So it was a chapter in Irish American life that, frankly, alongside the peace process, was the highlight of my life in America.
Yeah, and then, of course, comes Bruce Morrison, who delivered another, big batch of visas again for the Irish. But he had Brian. Nothing could, take away from the fact that Brian Donnelly, as a Lone Ranger, just went out. He saw, he heard, and he just did it with such conviction. It's may God rest him, you know.
Absolutely, Adrian. And, the sad part about it for him is he desperately wanted to be ambassador to Ireland. And he was going to be ambassador to Ireland, but Ted Kennedy, in his wisdom, decided that his sister Jean would be a better person in Dublin. And Jean was a great ambassador, but
yeah.
I always felt that Brian felt very badly about the fact that there was no question that in terms of who you would name as an ambassador, the most popular and favorite name among the Irish Americans would have been Brian Donnelly. But it didn't end up like that, unfortunately. But there's one thing I am glad about, which somebody had pointed out to me about 2 months ago. There was a picture on the front page of one of the Galway newspapers showing Brian Donnelly back in County Galway for the first time in about 25 years. So he did go back towards the end of his life, and he got a great reception, a city hall reception in Galway, for all he did. So I'm delighted to say that he wasn't forgotten in Ireland either.
Neil, thank you very much for joining us today. And again, it's not over till it's over. We all keep our fingers crossed that this will go without a hitch. What we did learn from you today, is that if the might of America, with the Clintons, with again George Mitchell, again the highest profile people in America who are not showing up for the first time. They've given already. They've done it. If they should get there, the UP has to. Simply better get their act together between now and then. I doubt very much that there will be much celebration in, the decades and centuries to come if they bear the burden of dragging the whole thing into the gutter for purely selfish reasons. And so
we can't allow it to happen. As I said, I'll finish from where I started. That policeman from the PSNI, a very senior policeman, shot 3 times in front of his 11-year-old son. Do we really want to go back to that? Do the DUP want to go back to that? Do you want to go back to the RTE news in the morning, starting off with a body has been found? We should remember that. We should remember what it was all about and what it was like. And the kids today, they take it for granted, but there was a huge amount of work put in to put the first agreement in place, and I think we need to put another agreement in place now that basically changes the political scene forever and makes it fair.
Neil, from your lips to God's ears, thank you very much for joining us today. Neil O'Dowd, friends, and you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com.